Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Rudy Mazarigos, the Acting Chief Information Officer of the Army Research Lab. Rudy, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Jason, thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with some basics. The mission of the Army Research Lab. Again, I always tell people this. It sounds like pretty simple mission, straightforward, but whenever I ask this question, I really learn something. So give us a sense of what you guys are there to do.
ARL is the Army's premier laboratory that performs what we call innovative science and technology research that supports the warfighter.
And when you say research, is it from the initial, hey, this is an idea, let's make it work, or what? Because research and development, it's broad, and there's so much that goes across the DoD.
Absolutely. Everything from the concept of ideas, from very basic ideas, into a little bit more theory, into some supporting methods, into some hypotheses, and into the actual work of research. And to do that, we have hundreds of PhDs here. We also have thousands of engineers and scientists. ARL currently has over 100 laboratories that do where research is performed across a lot of the physical sciences and some human dimension sciences that you're probably familiar with.
And when you talk about research, is it a specific type of research? Meaning, if you're researching the next type of weapon, would that be something you guys do, but as well as the next computer?
The next weapon, not quite, but we would do what we call the foundational science to support the next weapon. That would be material development, that would be making it stronger, that would be work on it at the atomic level, the molecular level, the mesoscale, what we call the mesoscale, and also the quantum level. It's everything associated with, again, doing the very preliminary basic science and then nurturing it into other science and other research that eventually becomes a weapon.
Very interesting. Now, I know you were telling me before that ARL has actually a really interesting history as well when it comes to research and development. Give us a little sense of the past of ARL and some of the things that you guys used to work on.
In the 1940s, ARL was a big part and developed the very first computer of the time. It was called the ENIAC, and you may have heard of it. This was a system that took up an entire room, and it was a bunch of tubes and a bunch of processors. Well, they weren't processors then, but they were a bunch of tubes. And then they had hired a bunch of female mathematicians to do calculations and what we call proofs to make sure that the computer was working accurately. Hence, the term computer comes from these ladies who were the original computers of math.
Oh, interesting. I don't think people know where that term comes from. Basically, what you were doing is checking the quote-unquote machine to make sure it was doing the right thing.
Yes. Now it's the other way, right?
Yes. Now the machine checks us. Exactly. Now, you guys also work specifically with the internet at large, too. Is that correct?
Yes. And we've continued that line of thinking in the line of research. For example, many people don't know that ARL hosts the Root H server. The Root H server is a DNS server that supports the internet at large. There are 13 of them, and we support Root H. Now, we jokingly call it Root Hoorah.
Well, how did you guys end up doing the support of Root H versus any other root or no root at all?
At the time, and you know, again, we're pioneers, and we are looking for new opportunities. And at that time, there was nobody doing it, and it needed to be done. It needed to be done because we support a series of supercomputers that needed access directly to one of this. So it was an opportunity that was available in the market, and we took it.
Now, you're the acting CIO of the Army Research Lab. Does that mean you get to be in charge of Root H, or is there a separate entity within the ARL that kind of has to oversee that?
It's a separate entity. You know, that's deep in our research organization. I support the operational IT. I support what most CIOs would call regular IT. But I do play with some of those areas. There are some areas where I do influence that, and that's actually what makes this job very exciting.
And give me a sense of that mission. You talk about regular areas and operational. I imagine along with that operations, it's also the strategic piece of it, and as well as the visionary piece.
Yes. Let me give you an example. ARL, we have pretty much every desktop that you could conceive of. We are primarily a Windows organization. However, we also have a huge environment of Unix PCs, well, Unix systems. We also have a lot of Apples and a lot of Macs. These are the things that the researchers need to perform their work. And some of them even have multiple systems. And some of them are standardized, some of them are not standardized. We have a lot of what we call one-off systems and technologies for a specific research purpose. That's just a piece of what we do.
And I'm sure working with mathematicians and computer scientists and engineers always makes your job both fun and challenging as they come up with, well, I could do it this way, and then they do it, and you're like, no, that goes against the security or something. Do you kind of run into that type of thing where you kind of have to kind of push back a little with the engineers and such who want to do kind of their own path?
You know, it's a balancing act. Our researchers' needs are very specific. Mostly, they need flexibility and adaptability, and again, these one-off systems. Now, as a CIO, it's a challenge to give them what they want and also to meet all the DoD and Army compliance requirements for information assurance and information security. For example, you heard me mention that we support all of these systems. Well, in fact, we maintain over 34 standard configurations. Now, that sounds like a lot, doesn't it? That you have 34 standard configurations, but that's exactly what our 3,000 researchers need. Now, it's such a complex undertasking that we actually have a lab dedicated to developing and testing those configurations. It's called the Innovative and Information Technology Evaluation Lab. And its mission is to test all the configurations, to develop the standard desktops, and to test all the applications that the researchers need before we give it to them.
Now, does this add another layer of complexity for you as well? Because you have to not only get those things tested, but support so many different configurations and so many different types of operating systems.
Yes. Customer service is number one. It's a core CIO function wherever you go. Here, it's just a little bit harder to do so because of the many needs that the researchers have.
That's a great segue into talk about your office a little bit. How many federal employees do you have to help do that customer service and that support? How many contractors, and what is your IT budget for 2012?
Our CIO organization currently has three branches. In it, we have 44 full-time equivalents, what we call the feds. We are supported by 170 contractors across three core IT services contracts. Our operational budget is $40 million a year. And we also have some operational IT functions that are still embedded in our research organization.
So that ratio, roughly about 4 to 1, is that a pretty good ratio of feds to contractors, or is that something you're looking at to maybe shrink a little bit?
There's a balance there. And traditionally, this organization has had a lot of single disciplinary IT folks. The new emphasis that we have here is for what I call multidisciplinary IT folks. For example, that would be a person who just does not manage the internet server, but also some of the applications on it that actually and works with the developers. So rather than having 10 people doing, you know, basic internet stuff, I have three.
And you talk about three branches. Can you just quickly give us a 30-second on each of the branches?
There's the application management and the development branch. It's currently managed by a new branch chief. She is responsible for ensuring that our old legacy applications now have a new path forward. We're going to a lot of standard platforms and a lot of standard operating systems that they never worked on before. We're primarily an Oracle shop, and these days you need more than that, and she's taking us to that future. Also, I have a new Information Resources Center branch chief, and this is the person who manages our five libraries as well as our technical publication team. I also have another branch chief called the Corporate Information Management Branch, and that is the part that handles the management aspects of IT function. That would be contracting, support, personnel, things of that nature.
All right, I think that's a great segue into your priorities, but first we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rudy Mazarigos, the Acting Chief Information Officer of the Army Research Lab.
Hi, this is Hillary Howard. Join me on October 14th at the Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember, a 54-mile bike ride taking place at National Harbor, Maryland, and a 5K run walk in Washington, D.C. The Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember raises funds and awareness about the service and sacrifice law enforcement officers make each day as they work to keep our communities safe. To register today, go to rideandruntoremember.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rudy Mazarigos, the Acting Chief Information Officer of the Army Research Lab. Now, Rudy, before break, we're talking a little bit about your office, how it's set up. We're talking about the mission of the Army Research Lab. And you gave us a little bit of maybe insight into some of your priorities. You talked about the application management and development branch and some legacy applications that have a new path forward. Give us a sense. What are you working on? What are your priorities over the next 6 or 9 months?
As we were discussing the priorities that I have for the next 6 to 9 months are pretty much a continuation of the things I've been working on since I started here. I mentioned to you that ARL is very unique, and the way that we do things is also very unique. And striking a balance between what the Army wants and what researchers need is truly a challenge. One of the things that I did here in my first year and a half was to seriously look at the organization and say, are we structured to be effective and efficient? And the answer at that time was yes, everything works. but there are lots of opportunities to do things better. And one of those was to reorganize the organization, hire some branch chiefs, and also hire some team leads to support them. So within the next 6 months, I hope to be hiring 4 to 6 team leads to support my new branch chiefs. Those branch chiefs, in the time that they've been here, have been developing transition paths for the current way we do things to the new and better way we want to do things. I'm a big believer of the ITIL processes, the information technology, information library way of doing things. There's a lot of things that we can do more in terms of planning, strategic planning, governance, taking that holistic view to IT, and we're doing those things. We continue to improve IT management. We are hoping to develop a CPIC process. That's the Capital Planning and Investment Control process. I'm sure all the CIOs are familiar with what those things are. At ARL, that's a little bit of a challenge, and it's a challenge because the researchers and our research directorates pretty much have to buy into these things. ARL is structured organizationally very similar to what you would find in an academic environment or a university. And in those organizations, sometimes people are working on different sheets of music. And here, it's an orchestration job that we're doing. Also, the Army, within the past year and a half, 2 years, has developed a series of enterprise initiatives. Everything from enterprise consolidation services, the DISA email that you've heard about, the Army Data Center Consolidation Plan, and there's at least 7 or 8 other large-scale initiatives. ARL wants to be a participant in those things. We see those as very good things for the Army overall. And my role is to make sure that what the Army wants is matched with how ARL does things in terms of research, and we, again, strike a balance.
All right, so several interesting priorities. Let me back up to one of them now. You talk about the reorganization. In the next 6 months, you hope to hire maybe 4 to 6 team leads. What kind of teams are we talking about? Obviously, they're within those three branches that you described earlier, but are they going to be working on specific projects, or is it a more broader program type of lead?
Currently, it would be on the more broader program type of lead. Let me give you an example. We have maybe 30 custom financial applications. As an organization like ours, like any other research organization or like any grant-making organization, you have to be able to accurately know where your funds are at any given point. And then you have to make sure that they are being spent according to the plan. And in this case, it would be a research endeavor. ARL isn't just ARL by itself. We have a series of partners. We partner with DoD organizations. We partner with intelligence organizations. We partner with academic organizations. And we have to report the success of our joint research initiatives. They fund some of our projects. We fund some of theirs. So reporting is key. And these financial applications were written several years ago in, you know, traditionally old legacy code, and it's about time that we modernize them. So we're now looking at a platform to support all of that type of reporting. You know, the data warehousing, business intelligence, all that stuff that's now current and pretty much the norm in many CIO organizations, we're making that the standard here. Also, we have a lot of needs to manage and have visibility into our research endeavors. In the past, we've had some applications here called Researcher Portal. And the idea was that this would give the executive managers of the organization visibility into all that research. Well, that application needs to be modernized and needs to be updated to reflect current practices, as well as what's going on these days with research. That's just one area. The Information Resources Center, for example, we manage 5 libraries. These libraries provide access to over 5 million digitized records. This is books, periodicals, serials, all sorts of electronic references, and they're accessed by our researchers at least 500 times a day. What we're looking to do now is to come into the modern age and to go more toward the electronic publishing and to the access on everything versus ebooks and e-readers. That's something that is a fairly recent development, and we're going full path to it. In terms of, you heard me mention the Capital Planning and Investment Control Project, we're going to start off with an IT Portfolio Steering Committee, and then over time, we will grow that into a capital planning and investment control function within the organization.
All right, plenty going on. Wow. Let me start with the 30 financial applications. Are they all still necessary? I mean, is there a move to maybe consolidate those 30 down to, you know, maybe 15 and then also upgrade them into that kind of, as you said, the business analytic tools, the data warehouse?
Absolutely. I mean, if you remember, you know, way back when 10, 15 years ago, every system, every application was its own unique system. And over time, you didn't take out systems. Every new functionality, every new enhancement was probably a new system. And what happens is that eventually you have too many old systems. So what we're looking to do is to consolidate the core functions of what we have here. We're also looking to migrate those areas where we need information and those areas where we have business requirements and use the Army ones. So, for example, the Army has several initiatives to provide what they call business information systems, and we want to migrate to some of them.
Is this going to be eventually be, from a data warehouse standpoint, eventually going to be some kind of RFP or some kind of acquisition strategy?
We're still at the conceptual stages.
Okay, so something maybe that people could look out for in the next, you know, 6 months or so or more.
Yes.
And then the other thing is you mentioned was the Information Resources Center that where you manage five libraries. Currently, when you say library, we're thinking of, you know, books on a shelf. I imagine these are digital files, but they're not in an XML format, for instance. And is that what you're hoping to get to? Or are these actually paper and then you got to make them digital?
All of the above. Our libraries here for the longest time were a traditional library where we had a large browsing space. And the browsing space is what the librarians call, you know, when you walk the stacks, like when you were in college and you have books and periodicals everywhere and you have microfiche. We still have a large chunk of that. We have a large physical presence of books. But in the past 6 months, 9 months, we've been very successful in getting rid of a lot of the periodicals and a lot of serials that are already available in electronic format. There is no need to keep a large space to just maintaining paper. The things that are very unique to ARL, for example, are technical publications. Currently, we publish about 600 a year, and we have pretty much been in that area every year. And some of those, the older ones, are still available as a physical record. So we're going through painful processes, and I say painful, to digitize them and to make them available.
Does this also include, for instance, a document management system and a way to maybe do a search where you're not just searching each document, but searching the entire database?
That's what we want to go to. Let me give you an example. In the 30s and 40s, ARL, through its ballistics organizations at that time, did a lot of ballistics testing on every type of munition. Those physical records still exist in a little 5x6 size booklet that has formulas that were actually drawn by hand and computations actually drawn by hand because, you know, back then they didn't have the typesetting to do that. Those records have proved to be of immense value to the Army, and we have them. So we're going through a process of digitizing all of them, and not just digitizing them, but also tagging them appropriately with meta tagging and things of that nature, so then they are searchable and queryable and easier to find by researchers.
Well, I'm hearing that from several different agencies about the whole like document management system, but also the idea of taking older documents and ensuring that they can be found forever. I mean, if you look at, for instance, NARA and the National Archives and Records Administration, are you looking at any other agencies for some best practices?
Yes, we are. We're always looking for best practices. Within the Army, there's several initiatives that are going this way already. For example, one of them is called the Enterprise Collaboration Services, and we want to be a part of that. And part of that will be sharing records and sharing files.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll maybe talk some more about your priorities and some of the other things you're doing. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rudy Mazarigos, the Acting Chief Information Officer for the Army Research Lab.
Did you know the D.C. metro area ranks number one in the nation to lives lost to colon cancer? Help crush colon cancer and spread hope and awareness by joining the Chris for Life Colon Cancer Foundation at their second annual Blue Hope Bash on Thursday, October 25th at the Park Hyatt in D.C. Live entertainment, notable local business leaders, members of Congress, dinner and silent auction. Funds raised will benefit patient treatment, cutting-edge research, and more. Visit chrisforlife.org for event details.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Rudy Mazarigos, the Acting Chief Information Officer of the Army Research Lab. Now, Rudy, before break, we were talking a lot about your priorities and a lot about the things you're doing, the reorganization within your office. One of the things you mentioned was you're a big believer of the ITIL process, the Information Technology Infrastructure Library, something that I'm seeing a lot from other CIOs as well. Give me a sense of that implementation and how are you using it, for instance, around cybersecurity?
As I mentioned to you, that ARL is an organization of about 3,500 folks, and yet we have about 7,000 systems. These are workstations of many flavors, and maintaining those is truly a challenging task. And the traditional way that we had done it was pretty much to let our researchers do that, manage their own systems, but over time that's proven to be ineffective and not a very efficient thing, let alone cost-effective. So what we've done is we've consolidated our services, we've developed some standardized programs, And to make those standardized programs fairly efficiently, we've adopted industry models like the ITIL. The ITIL is a very good framework to help you administer your help desk, your help desk processes, your repairs on systems, how you manage your calls, even how you do applications development, how you manage your networks, how you manage your infrastructure. It's truly a very good framework for the CIO professional to look at and say, I'm going to emulate that. Best of all, it does what I have and what I call in the CIO world, it's already done for me. I pick and choose what I want. And I pick and choose processes that are very defined and very discrete. Let me give you an example. We use a CA suite of tools to manage our network, and we have visibility into every desktop. And service management is a big deal. How the help desk ticket is created, how the workflow operates, how it goes from person to person to make sure it's effective and timely. Those are big things. And trying to figure them out yourself, you know, it'll take you forever. Using the ITIL process, we pretty much do that. It tells us how to route things, how to look at things effectively, how to monitor them, how to deal with them when they become issues or non-standard and things of that nature.
Now, how far into the ITIL implementation are you?
We've had, over the past years, we've had some fits and starts with it. We've adopted some Lean Six Sigma processes. We have green belt people. We have black belt people to do that part of it. But the ITIL process in terms of our help desk is actually very robust. It works very well. We take an awful number of calls to our help desk, both electronically, both by physical calls and by visits. And we have a very high satisfaction rate, 95-97% most of the time, which is very good. The challenge, though, is you know, those last 5 or 7% always are the squeaky wheels, and they get a lot of the attention. But considering the number of phone calls we take, the number of requests that we get, our success is pretty darn good.
And you also are using ITIL around cybersecurity, specifically around patching and things like that. Is that correct?
Yes, we do. As you know, as a DOD and Army organization, information security is a big thing. To be honest with you, we have a rather large team, one of the largest teams I've ever managed, just to maintain the security of our systems. Every system on our network is touched many times a day. It's always updated with antiviruses, with fixes, with patches, several times a day. When new vulnerabilities are discovered, we don't wait for exploits to be done. We're out there deploying them. I can tell you that our AI posture is very, very good. We maintain one of the highest standards currently out there for our type of organization, and it's a very good thing. Now, we do that because we have to strike that balance between having our researchers do what they want and doing and being compliant with the Army IA. I can tell you right now, the worst thing for us would be to have vulnerabilities and for us to be known as a weak part of the organization. The nature of the work we do kind of lends itself to people thinking that way already, so we go to the nth degree to make sure that our posture is number one.
It's interesting that you said you're touching machines every single day. I imagine, just to be clear, you don't have people who are actually touching the machines. You mean in the sense that you're pushing things out to them?
We have our machines touching our machines every day.
All right, because I was going to say, that's I think you mentioned 7,000 systems and probably multiple thousands of machines. That'd be a lot of work for your staff. They'd be almost, working 20 hours a day. Have you found that when you are able to push things out and you have the visibility down to the desktop, you're able to control, and I mean that in the positive sense, not in the bad sense, control what gets on, who puts on certain applications so as not to open holes that maybe you don't know about?
Well, I'll tell you, just the idea of having holes I don't know about is already starting me to worry. But I will tell you, no, we don't have that. Every application that's on our system is thoroughly tested, thoroughly configured. I mentioned that I have the ITIL lab just to do that. We have something called a COC. That stands for the Corporate Information Operations Center. It's 24/7/365. It's managed by subject matter experts who know how to touch every system, who know how to read the findings of the system. They also do the vulnerability weaknesses and monitoring of the system as well. So in that sense, we're touching it. Once people, for example, come into the office and they bring a laptop, the second it's connected into our network, it's being scanned for compliance. And if it's not, it goes through a process of patching and configuration and updating until it is compliant, and then it goes on the network.
I imagine that with researchers who say, oh, I got to use this new application and this new piece of software. What's your process by which you say to them, no, you need to put it through this lab first? But, they come back to you and say, no, I need it now. I need it, yesterday. How do you kind of deal with that pressure? Because you had talked about flexibility earlier, but unfortunately, when researchers are in the middle of something, they necessarily don't want to wait for your flexibility.
Right. And for that, we have a series of separate standalone systems in what we call enclaves. And these are systems that are not as tightly controlled as our operational and our network systems are. So the researchers do have that flexibility in their research labs. where they can test and develop new things, new code, acquire new applications, some things that don't go through our rigorous testing. And so they have that opportunity. But we're also very efficient and very effective in terms of giving people waivers. When a researcher needs something, we have established processes where they make a request and our IA folks look at it and they will validate it or they will not validate it. Most of the time it involves dialogue and conversation one-on-one where we have to say, well, what do you need it for? What does it do? And, you know, we have to get into the weeds with them to understand what they want. We rarely ever say no. What we will do is say, either say not that way, or we'll do it, but we'll do it this way. And we've been very effective and very successful. Now, for those true, true one-offs, that's when we have to tell them, no, you have to play with that in your isolated environment.
And does that isolated environment, obviously it touches the internet, but just doesn't go through your network and probably maybe has a dedicated internet connection type of thing?
No, our isolated environments do not touch anything. They are exactly that. Now, again, there's various degrees of them. We call them enclave. DISA and the DoD have come up with a series of standards for what these enclaves are. And what these enclaves are is that they are secured and safe environments to do different things. We use them to do research. And again, we have various levels of security on various types of enclaves. So there are a few, for example, that are gaming environments, and we're looking at gaming technology and we're looking at gaming graphics. Those have very minimal security requirements on them, but then again, they don't touch anything we do. So they're completely isolated, or they exist for one function and have only connectivity in one area.
We are almost out of time. Before I let you go, I do want to catch up with you about vendors and what should they know about working with your office. Obviously, you guys have a decent-sized budget, $40 million, but a lot of people are very interested in working with and for DoD.
I get a lot of calls from vendors, and I tell them all the same thing, which is I am very interested in what you have. Please send it to me electronically. If you have marketing materials, if you have a capability statement, something like that, send it to me. I will look it over. If I'm interested, I will call, or if I think that someone in my organization may be interested in something like that, I will forward it to them. In the past year, we've brought in a number of vendors on technologies that we were interested in. To be honest with you, we don't know who has the next holy grail. We don't know who has the next series of good and efficient technologies. So we just maintain an open mind to them. Send me what you got.
And do you guys do some meetings, or those happen when you find something that says, oh, I think we can use that, or I think that's something we need more information about?
Yes, it's the latter. When we find something of interest to us, we'll move on. We'll jump on it.
All right. Well, don't blame me if your email inbox is filled up now from all the other people who are interested in meeting with you. We are unfortunately out of time. Sounds like we could probably talk a little bit longer, but we will have to have you back on another time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Rudy Mazarigos, the acting CIO of the Army Research Lab. Rudy, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Jason, it was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.